WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. The current round of Mideast peace talks is a reminder of what a fine art negotiating is. My guest Max Kampelman is one of our country's artful diplomatic ambassadors, having served both Democratic and Republican administrations. He headed the U.S. delegation to the Conference on Security and Cooperation in Europe, which met in Madrid and focused largely on human rights issues in the Soviet Union, and the delegation to negotiations on nuclear and space arms, which met in Geneva. Just a few months ago, Kampelman headed a human rights delegation at a month-long conference in Moscow. Kampelman's route to the negotiating table was different from many of his colleagues. He grew up in the Bronx. As a young man, he was both liberal and anti-communist. He was a conscientious objector during World War II on moral and religious grounds. But he felt the rules of war changed with the atom bomb, and being a CO no longer seemed effective to him. He joined the Marines. I asked him if, after his years of Cold War negotiations, he was prepared for the collapse of the Soviet Union.
I had no doubt in my mind but that the Soviet system was rather rotten to the core. Now, you don't expect something that's rotten to the core to last, but I think it's also true that I did not expect that the changes would take place peacefully and without violence. That was totally unexpected and obviously most welcome as far as I was concerned. I mean, the fact that the Warsaw Pact, for example, could disintegrate without violence, that the Communist Party would give up its power or would be forced to give up its power without violence and bloodshed. All of those things were unexpected and highly welcome.
You write in your book that negotiating is more an art than a science. Can you tell me what you thought the sneakiest thing was that ever happened during negotiations that you participated in?
Well, I don't know that I can think of the sneakiest thing. I tend in life to look at the more positive things. But obviously, when you're negotiating and you don't like what the other side does, you look upon it as somewhat sneaky. I remember when I started the arms talks, and this comes to mind now to answer your question. The day before the arms talks in Geneva were to start in 1985, Mr. Chernenko died, the leader of the Soviet Union. So I called up my Soviet counterpart, whom I'd never met, but I knew he spoke some English. And I said, look, Mr. Ambassador, I see where Chernenko has died. We're supposed to meet tomorrow and open up our session. As far as we're concerned, if you want to have this tomorrow as a day of mourning and postpone the opening for a day, we'll accommodate. If you have to go back to Moscow for the funeral and want to postpone the talks a few days, we'll accommodate ourselves. He said, no, no, by no means do you have to worry about that. We'll continue as planned. I said, fine. But what I will do, as a matter of courtesy, is I'll stop by your embassy, and sign the memorial book, which is a diplomatic nicety, which I knew about and offered to do. He said, I'd appreciate that very much. Well, I did that the next day, and that meant that I was about 5 minutes late coming into the meeting hall because I was delayed in the memorial book ceremony. And there I walk in and I find my Soviet colleague taking advantage of my 5 minutes being late in order to have a unilateral press conference and try to get some kind of an advantage. Well, I thought that was rather sneaky. And I told him so. And I told him he shouldn't have done it and I don't want him to do it again. And I think he took me seriously and he didn't do it again.
What was the effect of the press conference?
Actually, I was able to negate the effect of the press conference. By simply saying we're going to delay going into our talk. And I then began talking to the press, and I gave him our objectives and what our intentions were, so that, in effect, the press ended up with a balanced rather than an unbalanced story.
What is the breakthrough that you helped with during negotiations that you participated in that you're proudest of?
Well, There are really two areas. The first was the implicit recognition by the Soviets after a really long, long period of negotiation that their human rights behavior and our human rights behavior were matters of international concern and not necessarily matters only of their internal responsibility or our internal responsibility. Now, in another area, which is somewhat related, is in the arms control. When I started negotiating in arms control, a number of people came to me and expressed surprise that I would have assumed that responsibility. And when I inquired why they expressed surprise, they said, because you'll never get an agreement. You know the United States cannot accept an agreement based on trusting the Soviets. We're going to need to be able to verify the agreements that the Soviets sign. And you know, we can't accept verification unless we can have people on the scene looking through their own eyes as to whether the agreement is being enforced or not. And the Soviets will never permit that, because the Soviets have made it clear that's an interference in their internal affairs. Well, one of the great things I'm proud of was that in our negotiations in Geneva, the Soviets finally agreed to have on-site inspection, namely that we could have inspectors in Soviet military establishments and factories, just as they could have inspectors in ours. That broke the back of the whole arms control impasse, because it meant no longer do we have to base our agreement on trusting the other side, but we could verify.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Ambassador Max Kampelman, and he's headed up American delegations on human rights and nuclear arms reductions. He's written a memoir called Entering New Worlds, the memoirs of a private man in public life. More after the short break. This is Fresh Air. Ambassador Max Kampelman is my guest. You grew up Jewish in the Bronx, and as you say in your memoir, that growing up Jewish in the Bronx is a little bit like growing up German in Berlin. You're from the same background as everybody around you is. That wasn't the case, I don't think, for you in government. As an ambassador, as an American ambassador, did you ever feel set apart because of being Jewish?
No, I really didn't. But a few incidents come to mind now that are significant, perhaps. When I started my diplomatic activity as an ambassador, it was in Madrid with the Soviets. And just before our meeting opened, through an intermediary, I spent a few hours with the Soviet delegate. And we went through a lot. We spent about at least three hours together. Maybe it was a little longer than that. We had a good talk. You got to remember, this was at a time of Afghanistan, and our talking with each other was the only time during that period that the U.S. was talking officially to the Soviet Union. And we were very honest. I was very straight and direct with him. And that night, after our meeting, my aide, who spoke Russian well, called me on the telephone and said, look, he just heard from the Soviets. They wanted to meet the next night again to continue our conversation. And I made an instantaneous decision. And I said, look, you call him back and you say, I'm sorry, but tomorrow night is the Jewish high holidays, and I'm going to the synagogue tomorrow night. And I'll be glad to meet with him the following evening. I just wanted to make that point. Well, the point, I'm sure he knew I was Jewish, but I also wanted to make it perfectly clear that not only was I Jewish, but I talked about it, and I wanted him to know that. I think that had an impact on him. But I can never honestly say to you that I ever felt any discrimination or being set apart by the fact that I was Jewish in the United States government.
One of the parts of your memoir that I found very interesting had to do with the difficulty of maintaining your health when you're a diplomat at high-level negotiations. You had a heart attack in 1987.
I did.
And shortly before that, you were in Geneva, heading up an American delegation. And, you know, you say it was just very hard to keep healthy. You're used to working on a treadmill at home for exercise. That didn't work out in Geneva.
That's true.
And
the dietary standards are different in Europe. And it was, you know, I used to say in Geneva that it's very difficult to find a restaurant that did not have superb food. And that food is generally, you know, French food. And French food is a food filled with creams. So those of us who have some kind of a concentrated attention to cholesterol find ourselves at a disadvantage.
Well, what about a diplomatic meals? I imagine there are certain meals that you are served that are very high cholesterol that would be really impolite to not eat.
That was the point. And that turned out to be a handicap. Plus the following fact. I guess I never had a job as difficult or as stressful as the arms negotiating job that I had in Geneva. It was a highly visible job. You may remember that I was in the newspapers, my photograph was in the newspapers, and not just in the United States, but even more so in Europe. And I had the experience many times, believe me, of walking on a street or being at an airport and having somebody coming over and saying, you know, my blessings are with you, or my children or grandchildren's life depends on what you do. You know, exaggerated kind of concerns, but obviously to the people expressing it, not exaggerated. Exaggerated, I suppose, in my own mind, but only because I never feel that any one person is indispensable toward a process. But let me tell you, I found that to be very stressful. I found that to fill me with a sense of duty and a sense of responsibility, and a sense which, in effect, said, you've got to do everything you can to succeed here. There's a lot at stake. And the combination of stress plus lack of exercise. I mean, the security forces didn't want me to walk in Geneva. They wanted me to go in a bulletproof car because Geneva is an open city with a lot of PLO people and terrorists, and so they wanted me in a bulletproof car. So a lack of exercise, food that's itself rich, plus stress, all of that, I think, must have contributed to the heart attack. So I had the heart attack, and I suppose I'm lucky to be alive, but I'm very happy to be alive. And well, I'm glad we finished the task.
You were just in Moscow in the fall for a human rights convention. Did you think when you were offered the chance to head up the American delegation in Moscow, did you think of saying no for health reasons? Or do you feel like you've often had to decide between, you know, personal health and a larger calling?
Well, let me say that right after my heart attack, and I was in the hospital for nearly, well, more than 10 days, and then I was home recuperating, and then there was a meeting going to be taking place in Geneva. I had my arms negotiations, and it was a rather important meeting coming up. And I asked my doctor, I told him I wanted to go to Geneva, and he permitted me. So actually, shortly thereafter, I went. Now, my wife insisted that one of my children accompany me, so I shouldn't be alone. And so he should watch over me a little bit and keep me from being excessive in my energy. And he did, and it worked out very well. No, I never thought of saying no because of my health to the Moscow meeting or the Geneva meeting or the Copenhagen meeting of the last 2 years. I'm pleased to serve, and though I am a little tired now of traveling given my age, the fact of the matter is, when you're given an opportunity to serve, I just feel I ought to serve.
Well, I want to thank you very much for talking with us about your life and your career. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much for your interest.
Ambassador Max Kampelman, his new memoir is called Entering New Worlds. This is Fresh Air.